ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय चाक्षून्मिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपा कदा मायं ददाति सा पदन्तिकम्। पञ्चकल्पातरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभयेव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो राम राम हरे हरे। So greetings from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. I'm the guest of Shastra Prabhu. He's one of our five-year regular member Sangha people. And it was around that time, a little bit before then, that I had met him. It was the second time in Vrindavan, but in one sense it was his first. And I met him there. And I'm at his house, and it's very, very nice. I mean, I read one story. It was about one of the famous yoga teachers in the world, and, a Western guy, and he, very good family in Texas, good mother and father, and a kind of progressive. And when he was very young, he learned yoga and he went to India to study under one of the most powerful yogis. Then he came back to America and he was looking for answers. No one could give the answers. And he met the Hare Krishnas, they gave the answers. I mean, that's one of the ways that faith is developed. That there's a cohesive philosophy that explains the relevance of everything and the meaning of everything. There's a theme. A theme means a concept that connects apparently unrelated points. So this world is very, very confusing. When you come in contact with knowledge, you understand that it has a purpose. You understand everything in relationship to that purpose. And it's quite a revelation. So he had that revelation and became a devotee. But I guess that was the 80s, where maybe just after Prabhupada left, the direction of the mission was becoming a little bit lost. To Prabhupada's glory, the aim of the mission stayed intact in various ways. I mean, you can see that that's his glory, but that somehow, it became very business and collection oriented. And they even kind of perverted the term Sankirtan to, selling things. So obviously he was a very brahminical person. And then after 5 years, he came to this realization. He said, well, there are nice people here. And there are people that are not nice, but they don't change. And my parents are not devotees, and they didn't practice, and they're nice. So he gave up the practice. Of course, you don't change just by selling things. I mean, there's some sukriti, some tapasya. I'm going to come to a point here. I'm going to come to a point here. Then, of course, I felt very sad as I was reading the book. And then he said that, and then when I got out, I opened a business selling paintings. And he said that the result of 5 years of sadhana is that I became a good salesman. But I have to say that people do change. You just have to adopt the process to change. And unfortunately, I guess he probably was getting benefit, but and the people get, but not perceptible, because there is a way to change. And what's the change? The change is bhakti. And what's the symptom of bhakti? The symptom of bhakti is your attraction for chanting and hearing. When you love Krishna, you want to chant about Krishna. But how does that happen? It happens by hearing about Krishna in association of people who have affection for Krishna. You have to do the work. You just can't make allegiance. I am a member of this mission. I am a member of that mission. You can't put a stamp on yourself. I am a devotee because I'm linked this way. I'm joined this way. We don't accept that, oh, you're a Christian. You're very elevated like Christ. Not enough. But if you follow Christianity, you pray and you love your fellow man and whatever those principles are, there should be a change. And same thing with Krishna consciousness. It has to be a process that's entered to get realization. I'm an embarrassed Shastra, but I'm just sharing my realization because I've been coming here for 5 years. And Shastra is a businessman. It's a very intense thing. You have to worry about money. You have to manage people. But I see that he's changed. Because I've been here for 5, 6 years. Gunabari Martinos, he's changed. And what's the symptom? He's good. He loves to chant in here. He's wanting, he's pushing me. Let's read. Let's chant. Let's hear Chaitanya Bhagavat. Let's hear Krishna Karnamrita. We're reading, we're chanting. He wants to. That's his desire. How did that come about? Well, I have to say, by Krishna's grace, it does give me edification for these sanghas that I do. Because I realize at least, he's heard 500 classes, and most of them are about, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, you hear. But even more important than that, he started to go to India. And when he goes to India, he chants and hears all day long. He's not by nature a tyagi. Wouldn't look at him a classic yogi. Shastra. Not a classic yogi. But the process of bhakti is simple. He comes to India, he attends Mangal Artik, attends the morning program, goes out on Parikram, comes back, comes to my class, goes to the evening kirtan, reads with Bhuvaneshwar for 2 hours. This year, he went for about, couple of weeks to all the 12 forests of Vrindavan with Gita Nagari. Every day, going out to beautiful places and hearing the pastimes and hearing the stories. And then chanting and hearing. You do that. You get nishtha, then you get ruchi. You get taste. It's like water. When water is mixed with other things, it's not so tasty. But when it's just water, it's tasty. So when your bhakti is mixed with so many other things, it's hard to get a taste. But when it's just bhakti, and then that taste gives realization, and it enters into your heart deeply. So I'm seeing, I read that book. Yeah, I'm sorry. He didn't get the change. I'm sorry they didn't send him to India. Go out with Gita Nagari for, 15, 20 days. Go up in Puri, morning to evening. Blissful. Get up, go to Tota Gopinath, come back, 6:30, a morning program till 8:30, chanting and hearing. Take some prasadam, go out. Do kirtan, go here, come back at 1 o'clock, start back at 5, into the evening, chanting and hearing, associating with devotees. That's also my realization. I'm kind of here in America. It's more of a challenge. I'm making a sacrifice, I feel. I mean, in one sense, traveling is brutal for me. That's why I'm here, taking a little rest for a couple of days. Traveling is brutal. Here, there, different things every day, different diet, different I'm trying to spend more time in the Sun Falls in India, but I know when that realization comes, you know, I'm in Kartik or a Kadasi. And Chere Vritani Haritoshanani. Chere Vritani, you make a vrata harita only for the pleasure of Krishna. You make that vrata in the morning for an hour. You make that vrata in a Kadasi for a day. You make that vrata in a pilgrimage for a couple of days. You know, you go to Vrindavan and you see people like Mother Srimati, you know, Bhuvanesh, Mahanidhi Swami, who've now made it for the rest of their life. Bhakti-titti madhavi janani. When you do that, bhakti janani, bhakti's awakening in your heart. So it's nice, you know. I'm doing my puja, I'm hearing Chaitanya Bhagavat. Before that, we read Krishna Karnamrita. After that, we do kirtan. We meet again before dinner. We read more Krishna Karnamrita. Ayendra's kirtans are going. So you change. You will change. If you fix and focus and take some time, some day, some morning, some weeks, only for Krishna. Very, very, very powerful. And in that regard, while reading Krishna Karnamrita, which is Bilva Mangala Thakur's realization about his experience of the beauty of Krishna. And when you hear that poetry, you know it is from a realized person. Because it's not just his sight and he's blind. It's his love, which Krishna is reciprocating with and flooding his senses with himself, which is what prema is. Your senses are flooded and you enter deep into what is the glance of Krishna, what is the glance of God, which is a very dynamic thing. And he's trying to express it, and it's very beautiful. I was hearing it and I thought, yes, some sweetness is there. And to taste this type of sweetness is the greatest fortune. And to taste the humility born out of the experience of that mercy. So I'm going to have to get my own copy now. Beautiful, beautiful. That's prema. You know, you're hearing Krishna. You're seeing Krishna. You're smelling Krishna. You're tasting Krishna. You're touching Krishna. And each of the senses is hearing, tasting, feeling, seeing, smelling Krishna. Each of the senses. As much as I say Prabhupada now, through your ears you're seeing him. And if somehow he ever touched you, you may feel him. If that samskara, that impression's in your mind. Madhurya Kadambini, that's how waking up in the spiritual world is described. A flood of Krishna through all your senses. And that's called Odharya, absolute magnanimity. So we have to strive for this. As I explained before, what is suiting me now is my Wednesday class. I'm just going to share my realizations and share what I'm going to be speaking about in the next week at these seminars. Last Saturday was a wonderful day. Mahamuni is also a member of our Sangha. I organized a scholars conference. We held our first one-day conference in New York. And it was really wonderful. I wish I could, maybe I'll ask Mahamuni to explain a little bit about the subject he was talking about, but it was beautifully done. About agency, where does volitional will arise in the mind or the soul? And it's a discussion. And then Pradyumna talked, and then we had Prashadam, and then Shamdas came and spoke about Vallabha's conception, Vallabha's philosophy. And it's so beautiful to bring the Vaishnavas together. Prabhupada wanted a world, you know, wanted ISKCON to be a house in which the whole world can live. And I don't think that necessarily meant that everyone had to believe exactly what we do. But it would mean that by the faith and strength of our connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we'd be able to organize and spread God consciousness in a way in that we can unite the theists. I have a bhakti experience in New York. It's a very interesting thing. Ami is a Sangha member, and she has a beautiful two-bedroom apartment. And she turned her living room into a temple just for these Sanghas. A seva, seeing the world through seva. She's retired. She's in her early 70s. She's seeing the world through seva. She looks at her house. She sees her room. Yes, this living room can best be served God if it's no longer a living room. I'll move the living room into one of my bedrooms. She has two bedrooms and lives alone. I'll make it a temple room. And we have such a nice bhakti experience of the people who are interested in my theistic conception, not just my philosophical knowledge, because it's not cold like that. I invite people who want to come from different lectures that I've given. And we get 20, 25 people. And it's beautiful. And what's the bhakti experience? It's the experiencing the shakti or potency of acts and objects of devotion, which have a potency to awaken the eternal nature of the soul. For those who are not proud. So we give them that experience. I work with Lakshmi Nrisinghe and his wife Puttarajani. Very simple program. Nice time, 5 to 7, 5:30 to 7:30. People could come, and then if they have to go in the evening, you know, sometimes the boyfriend's waiting downstairs. The lady, I have to go now, 7:30. You know, take some prasadam. But they experience it. We have kirtan and katha. Kirtan, katha, and then I do my japa meditation that I've developed. Five ways to enter into the holy name. And then fabulous prasadam. We had out of this world kofta, I think on some kind of pasta with steamed broccoli and breaded baked eggplant with cream sauce on it or something like that. And then a date nut sweet. But I know one of the ladies that comes, she works in Colombia, and she had come to one of my lectures in Rutgers. She came, and since then she's come to my programs. But she's from a Kashmiri Shaivite background, and she has a different guru. I'm not trying to convert her. She's coming to the program, she's hearing, she has her own guru. Not trying to convert her, but I'm seeing by the potency of Sri Chaitanya's mission, we are creating a facility where she feels she could get Sangha. And therefore she's serving Krishna also, because she's coming to the program. She wants to help, she wants to assist. So I think that's how the world can be, the house can be built in which the whole world can come. Because we don't even agree among ourselves, even within ISKCON. But it's the potency of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I'm seeing in the yoga world and all this, there's a lot of nice things, a lot of nice people. But that potency coming from Sri Chaitanya through Srila Prabhupada, I don't see that. For spreading, organizing, and institutionalizing in a broad way. Now, now I'll read a little Krishna Kanamrita if I have some time, but I do again, and I'm using you, but I hope not in a bad way, but I'm using you, not a good word, use you, but what I'm doing is I got to prepare my seminars that I give, and I want to sum up again what I'm going to do in terms of on the 19th in the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival. I'm going to speak about drama as yoga. So basically, in these type of conceptions, first I describe what is yoga. And yoga means you control the mind in a way where the mind becomes pure and reflective and can see the soul as different from the body. Yoga means that kind of distinction. That's the other phone problem. It's not my phone yet. One second. No, it's here. It's this. It's that kind of distinction. All problem is what in yoga? It's identification of that which is pure and eternal and blissful with that which is impure, temporary, and full of misery. So yoga is the process, basically, of dealing with the mind so you can see truth clearly and make that distinction. To not identify with the fluctuations of the mind. And, basically yoga basically has two parts. There's some instruction and understanding, and then there's some practice. So the tradition of Indian spirituality is that it started with Bharata Muni. He felt that the philosophy had to be made audible and visible. And therefore, drama was an effective means to present spirituality, but not just to present spirituality, but to experience spirituality. And it began where they really felt deeply that the aesthetic experience was leading you to the path of spirituality, because it was a kind of forgetfulness of self-interest. The problem in material consciousness was egotism, kind of putting yourself in the center. And that aesthetic experience would take you out of your own egotistic experience. This is what they felt. And you would do that if a drama was properly composed to represent strong emotions in the world, then there was an aesthetic experience which wouldn't involve you in ego, but would give you an emotional uplift that would transcend the mind, forget the mind. And there was, therefore there was, and then Natya Shastra, and Bharat Muni explained what is the origin of this Natya Shastra. And he explained, you know, the demigods or something, they felt that people could not become, and they wanted a fifth Veda. People couldn't understand. It's a traditional way of people explaining things like this, that there's four Vedas, but generally it's a fifth Veda. You know, it presents the same message in a different way. So it presents it in terms of an aesthetic experience. And it was classical. It couldn't be like, you know, comedy just couldn't be slapstick. You know, it had to be, have subtleties, and there were rules. I personally, by grace of my guru, have studied poetics and how that experience. Then, later on, Abhinav Gupta, he's famous, Kashmiri Shaivite, he felt that not just the aesthetic experience can help you transcend, but it can give you a mystical experience. And there are similarities with the mystical experience, is that you would feel some kind of unity, which is what drama does. It gives you a unity. Yeah, you know, there's one description when the devotees of Lord Chaitanya, so they gazed at him as if with a single pair of eyes. So the audience is one. There's a catharsis. There's an experience. Aristotle wrote the Poetics. Plato had another idea. We thought in the Republic we don't want drama. It takes one from, it removes one from real experience, you know, or something like that. Of course, in the Indian thought, to remove one from what people think is real experience is spiritual experience, to have a transcendent feeling. Abhinav Gupta had this idea, you know, how it was a mystical experience. And then later in the Bhakti tradition, it goes on, but especially Srila Rupa Goswami, he felt that the aesthetic experience was not just something that brings you away from a material experience, but the aesthetic experience would bring you into reality. If the aesthetics was devotion or bhakti, this is called rasa. Rasa is aesthetic experience to the highest degree. And he felt that the ultimate reality, the ultimate perfection, was a spiritual or devotional experience. So like Ishvara Pranidhan, you give your heart with devotion to God. And that would create an aesthetic experience. And he understood, whoops, hope this doesn't go out. I'm hearing those little things. Does that mean, you know, the battery goes? You know. Okay, I'm going to keep my computer on in case it goes off. Someone just whipped me a line. Got to be really stuck. And he thought, very interesting, that the actor becomes who he is acting. And the audience adopts the mood of who they are. So he understood that that really what an aesthetic experience is, it's transferred from the actors to the audience. And that when there is good poetry and good drama, which exemplifies the mood of bhakti or devotion, then the audience who has an aspiration to have a heart filled with love, by listening to these dramas, that expression would come to them. And that was one of the main ways in which one would experience this bhakti. And for him, what was this bhakti? It was an energy. The whole reality of the world was rasa. In the Taittira Upanishad, it says, rasa vai saha. The reality is that experience of heightened, aesthetic experience of heightened devotion of purity of heart called prema. What? Switch phones? Okay, 1 second.
Okay. I'm on another phone now. It's good that I'm giving this because this has a little bit of a buzz in it. I hope it doesn't. You want to see if you can get it on? And Shastra, I'll get another phone in a second. Shastra's going to give me another phone where I can get on in a second. So that experience would come to one. And that shakti or potency, that bliss or pleasure potency, the essence of which is this heightened love, by having dramas that parrot that exemplify that type of a sentiment, then the actors themselves would experience that. In other words, there was a certain type of consciousness that was purified. Okay, 1 second. Okay, this is a little better. Okay?
Yeah, it's working. In other words, there was a perfect, what drama would mean is that there's an experience somewhere, and then actors can recreate that experience. They can feel that experience, and then the audience can feel that experience. So there's an experience of perfected souls where they have an aesthetic experience. Cultured people, spiritual people have an ecstatic experience of heightened devotion or love in their hearts, which is bhakti. The actors and the drama would recreate that experience perfectly, and therefore the actors would have that experience. And then a qualified audience listening to it would also have that mood. And it wasn't just a mood that was carried out within the drama. It didn't end when the curtains closed. But one realized that that mood, right, was the mood that one should carry within one's heart always. And therefore the drama would never end. Because although they sometimes would actually physically watch a drama, although they would read particular scriptures where those experiences were expressed, but in their minds and meditations, they were always meditating on that lila, the play of Krishna, the play of the divine, which is not a mundane thing. I try to explain. Anyway, so what I'm going to attempt to do, next week I'm going to study much more effectively how to present this bhakti part. I think the first part I got down, because I just studied a little bit today what I'm going to present.
That's basically it. What is yoga? Is self-realization. What is basically aesthetic experience and how it's, it can be, how they would relate it to spiritual realization, then how they would relate it to, you know, parity mystical experience, and then how in the bhakti tradition, the rasa or experience itself, they would consider real. It would parody the liberated or existential experience that you achieve in perfection, which is bhakti, or intense love or devotion, heightened to the highest degree, which is called rasa. And the great souls, they would write these dramas, they were intricately composed, where the sentiment of affection for God, Ishvara Pranidhan, basically, would be heightened by different emotional experiences. They were very intricately composed. In fact, the exemplar of this type of spiritual practice was Sri Chaitanya. For 18 years of his life, he was in deep meditation, trying to experience the height of devotion. And how would he do it? By listening to the stories of great poets who wrote poetry and wrote stories where this experience of devotion was expressed to the highest degree. And if it wasn't composed properly, because whether it's in real life or whether it's in drama, to experience, have an aesthetic experience of an emotion, whatever it is, but to speak of bhakti or devotion, there would have to be appropriate emotional experiences. It's called rasa. So perfect. So he would have an assistant that would listen to the dramas, listen to the stories. And if they weren't perfectly composed, they weren't perfectly composed, then the rasa or that experience wouldn't be the rasa bas. It would be a shadow of the experience. It wouldn't come up to the fullest extent. And he wouldn't allow it. So we saw that's how one develops an aspiration. And then it's, you see, in my mind now, if I explain it to you as devotees, there's a whole frame of reference you have. In my mind, okay, now how am I going to explain this to the outside people? You know, I'm trying to figure it out right now as I'm speaking. Now, let me read some Rasa Shastra now, okay? And it's just beautiful. It's Krishna Karnamrita. I think this is what I may do. We'll just have a few verses and then we can go. But All glories to Chintamani and my initiating spiritual master, Soma Giri. All glories to my instructing spiritual master, the Supreme Personality of Godhead who wears peacock feathers in his crown. Under the shade of his lotus feet, which are like desire trees, Jai Shri Radha enjoys the transcendental mellow of an eternal consort. Anyway, the beginning is just classical. If you want to explain deep subjects in Krishna consciousness, you have to be Krishna conscious. Otherwise, there's no realization. You have to be in the right locus, the right locus, the right standing. And the position of reality is humility. The position of reality is periphery. So you have to be grateful. And you have to pray. Prayer increases prayer. Prayer is the expression of humility. It's the expression of glorification. It's the expression of entreaty. So you have to pray. You have to be grateful. And then you can experience mercy, which is our experience of God, and then express that. So no person who's going to speak on spiritual topics can speak on those topics from the platform of pride, nor can they actually have any understanding. That's why when I read this, there was one word that came from my mind. Realization. Realization. And how does that relaxation come? By the mercy of God. To one who can accommodate that realization, which takes humility. Because the realization is a happiness with inferiority and a happiness with superiority. A happiness with your inferiority and a happiness with the superiority of everyone else. From the platform of the soul. So he glorifies Chintamani, who is the prostitute. We know this story, Prabhupada would always tell it. Sivamangala Thakur, he was so attracted to a prostitute that he was rushing his father's funeral so he can get out of there and then cross the river and, you know, grab the dead body and try to climb over the wall, and the vine was a deadly python, and then, you know, and finally he crashed in. And Chintamani said, if you had the same eagerness for Krishna, you'd be a pure devotee. And I can say that to myself. If I had the same eagerness for Krishna as I do to promote my ego and senses, I do this prayerful reading when I did this bhakti course. When you focus people for 10 minutes in reading Prabhupada's books, you can't imagine what 10 minutes can do. But we can't spare that. So beautiful. So his glories to Chintamani and his instructing spiritual master and his instructing spiritual master and his initiating spiritual master. Same principle, same potency, bringing you closer. Generally, the initiating spiritual master is also the instructing spiritual master, because you get initiated by one who's instructing you and whom you have faith in the delegation of Krishna. But that delegation of Krishna is not limited to manifest through that person. It can manifest through another person even more powerfully, although you have authority with your initiating spiritual master, who will bless your advancement in any way. Unless he sees it's detrimental, the relationship. The same potency. And that really was the mood of Chaitanya's movement. You don't got this stamp in Chaitanya's movement. You know, he was a disciple of him, and he was a disciple. He was a disciple. They had gurus, and they respected gurus. But in the society of Chaitanya, it wasn't a differentiating factor into groups. And I know when I do programs in Jersey, it's people have different spiritual masters. You don't ask, you don't relate in that way. Although you may know someone's spiritual master, you may want to is it Vaishnav is one who increases faith in Buddhas. You may say something nice. You may. It's beautiful. So he's getting. And his instructing spiritual master was Krishna. Krishna came to him directly, would directly inspire him. Shastra is telling me Gidanagari take him to Vivamangala Thakur's Samadhi. Enjoys the transcendental mellow of an eternal consort. There is an entity who has the appearance of an adolescent boy, who is being inundated with desire tree flowers falling from the fingertips of the damsels of heaven. That boy is completely carefree, situated in transcendental beatitude, and he sends forth waves of sound from his famed flute. He is encircled by thousands of effulgent milkmaids, whose garments are becoming loose again and again from the extreme pleasure at hearing the flute or trying to hold them up. That adolescent boy, the pinnacle of munificence, places liberation from birth and death into the hands of his surrendered devotees. That boy. So we're discussing that principle of Rasa Shastra is that love is most powerfully expressed indirectly. You want to say you love someone, you don't say, oh, I love such and such. You say, oh, I love that person. He makes my, he does this and this. Oh, I love the person, maybe an accountant, who pushes the numbers. You know, who sits in the office on the last side. Oh, you know, black rimmed glasses one. You know, I mean, it's this guy, it's just like a frame. When the doors are closed, it's very powerful. When you open the doors, the power of it diminishes. So love is always expressed parokshavad, indirectly. There is an entity who has the appearance of an adolescent boy, and who is being inundated with desire tree flowers. So he's appearance of an adolescent boy, but he's being glorified by the demigods. So he's not an ordinary person, and he's completely carefree. Although he's so great, he's carefree. And he sends forth waves of sound from his famed flute. Oh, our God has a peacock feather. Our God has a peacock feather. It's, oh, when you read this and you see those descriptions and you think of the description, our God has a peacock feather. It makes so much sense, doesn't it? It makes so much, there's something in this book. And waves of sound from the famed flute. He's expressing his heart. Our God is expressing his heart publicly. Our God is playing jazz. He's expressing his love through that flute. Our God. And he's encircled by thousands of effulgent, beautiful milkmaids whose garments are becoming loose again and again from the extreme pleasure of hearing the flute. They're hearing Krishna's love for them. And then they go, ah, you know, lady, you know, they make, the lady wears a sari, I don't know, loosened garments, you know, you have to be a little formal to keep it all up. If you go, ah, you know, they all may fall off or something. You know, somehow it's unraveling. That adolescent boy is the pinnacle of munificence. The pinnacle. And he places the liberation in the hands of his devotees. That work he gives to his surrendered devotees. Okay. Hare Krishna. Anybody like to ask a question? So we're going to read this in the future. Krishna Kanhamrita. We did verse 1 and 2. I have to get it, though. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Vajradhe Devi.
Vajradhe, thank you. I know I got one letter from you. I have to answer. I didn't have time yet. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is...
Who's this? Who is
this? This is Kumar.
Hey, Kumar.
This is Kumar Maharaj.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Great.
Thank you, Maharaj.
So nice to hear the regular. Actually, these classes, I get the numbers. They're averaging now. They're up to between 1,500 and 2,000 downloads a week. That's pretty nice. And so we got our regular crew. That's especially nice. And then other people are listening. I know they are. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Gail.
Gail, Hare Krishna. Thank you, Gail.
Hare Krishna. Mm-hmm. Thank you also.
Oh, thank you. Anybody else? I'll make an advertisement. On June 26th, in Yoga Maya, I'm going to do a thing, Drama as Yoga. We did that drama with Alex. Yeah. And
what time
writing.
Is that going to be?
6:15. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Henry. Hey, great. Nice to hear you on Wednesday. And get better soon.
Thank you.
Nice. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Thank you all. Okay. Once you call for 3 minutes.